Kyle Filipowski's injury, NASCAR in Atlanta, and more. You're listening to The Hive with Devin Beasley, where you get the buzz on all sports all across the nation. We're back after a week off. I had some unavoidable appointments scheduled, so we're going to work around the podcast a little bit better in the future. But we're here and ready to dig into this half hour of sports. A lot coming your way. Let's get started. NASCAR, a couple weeks ago, I'm going to try to go back and talk about the Atlanta race because I did watch it. Atlanta's had some mixed reviews so far. It was repaved in 2021. Some people and even some drivers were not the biggest fans of the reconfiguration. After the repaving, it became much like a super speedway, and people didn't see the need to add an extra super speedway to the NASCAR schedule. You had Daytona and you had Talladega, and when they're running the oval configuration, you have Indianapolis, which isn't quite a super speedway, but it can run similar to one. Atlanta kind of turned into a super speedway, and it took a couple years, but we've had the best finish there in a long time, one of the best finishes I've ever seen. And what's crazy about it is it's still not one of the top five closest finishes in NASCAR history. Three drivers were separated by 7/1000ths of a second. It became very competitive in the final few laps of the third stage. Daniel Suarez got the edge over Ryan Blaney by a margin of 3/1000ths of a second. And then you had Kyle Busch at 7/1000ths of a second. Kyle came charging up on that last lap. For a minute there, before they showed the replay, I thought it was him. I thought he had gotten the win. But the scoring, NASCAR's come a long way with their scoring, because they could have given it to either one of those guys years ago. And just looking at the camera cut, you can see that Daniel Suarez has a bit of a bumper out in front and ahead of Ryan Blaney and Kyle Busch. So kind of heartbreaking for the other two guys. But it was an extremely entertaining race. That's two in a row there. And Atlanta's already in the running for the race of the year. And we're only three races into the season. We had Vegas last week. So this win, though, this is amazing for Daniel Suarez and his standing with Trackhouse and his career here. Why? He extended his contract in 2023, but even then, and even before the season had started, I would have said he was on the hot seat. There's a lot of young drivers out there. You've got Carson Hocifar out there. You've got Zane Smith. Daniel Hemric's been out there. Harrison Burton. A couple of these guys I would prefer a little bit more. But if I'm Justin Marks, I'm looking at those other guys, with my top three being Zane Smith, Daniel Hemric, and Harrison Burton. You know, Hemric's a little bit older. Zane Smith, Harrison Burton, they're in their 20s, so, and they're not fully developed yet. I would prefer Zane Smith over Harrison Burton. But either one of them I could have looked at and been, hey, Daniel Suarez hasn't been performing very well the last couple of years. We're going to give you guys a shot. Both of them have money following them, so give them a shot. Give them a stab at the 99 car. But this win for Daniel Suarez was big for him. It means more job security. It means that he's going to see the rest of his extension out and maybe receive one after the fact. And it's going to continue to push Trackhouse Motorsports up the ladder with the Chevy manufacturer. And they're going to get farther and farther up the ladder there until their partnership becomes tier one or better. All in all, Atlanta, I loved seeing a race like that. I want more of that from NASCAR. That's what I turn the TV on to see every Sunday. And we haven't seen it every Sunday, but that's what we want. We want the competitive races. We want the ones that are nail-biting finishes like that. I don't see a whole lot of those unless we're in Talladega or Daytona. And now we've got a race that's not Talladega or Daytona, and it's in the running for race of the year. That's huge. That's what I want. Las Vegas happened this past week here, and this is what I'm talking about. It wasn't as exciting as Atlanta. Kyle Larson had a great day. He swept all three stages and got the race win. There were really only two other drivers that really challenged for the lead, and that was Tyler Reddick and Kyle Busch. Larson just kind of ran away with it. Reddick honestly had the fastest car at the end of the race. He could have caught Kyle Larson. He should have caught Kyle Larson, and he probably should have won, but he got really, really, really loose. You could see it coming out of turn three, coming out of turn two. He was sideways, and that just killed the momentum of any kind of run he would get off of the corner trying to run down that five car. So this is, what, the second time Kyle Larson has swept Vegas in 3 years? So that's one big thing for Kyle Larson. He is putting his name out there as one of the premier guys at Las Vegas. I know a couple years ago he won 10 races in a season, and he's locking himself in for the playoffs now. I think we'll see him compete as the year goes on, and we may even see him return to the championship four again. This is one of those things with Las Vegas, though, especially with Atlanta being more of a super speedway. We learn a lot about some of these drivers now. We learn a lot about what teams are going to look like as the season goes on. With Vegas not being a super speedway, a lot of people don't like to look at the first couple races, especially now with Atlanta being more of a super speedway. We don't like to look at those races as this is what a team is going to offer us. Why? Because the super speedways are very unpredictable. They are races where anybody can win, or you're going to get caught up in the big one and somebody who's running up front could be junked in the garage in a matter of seconds. So a race like Vegas is kind of really where we get to see what kind of performance we're going to get out of certain drivers for the year. You know, obviously, we want to run well at the super speedways. You can put yourself in a major hole to begin with and to start the season with two of them back to back. But it's a good opportunity to really look and see early what we're looking at for the year. So most impressive for me, Spire Motorsports, outside of Zane Smith, obviously, he just needs some development time behind the wheel of a cup car. LaJoie and Josevar had a ton of speed. Both of them had top 10 to top 15 cars as the day went on. Both of them got caught up a little bit. LaJoie was looking very strong and has been looking very strong to start the season, even with him being wrecked this past weekend. Carson Hocevar had a top 20 car just about all day. He also ran in the top 10 and the top 5 at times. So he's just showing a lot of talent early. This is what I've been telling people. We talked about it the first week that this show started. The opportunity to have Carson Hocevar is one that people are going to regret, especially if Spire continues to perform the way that they do. Could see them become another contending team just on the up and up, especially if they can keep LaJoie and Hocevar under contract. Noah Gragson was another driver I was extremely impressed with. He was top 20 most of the day, and then he came out in stage three and was really, really competitive. Not really challenging for the lead. Like I said, only those three drivers of Larson, Reddick, and Busch kind of up there. But he finished, what, sixth? So he came out of nowhere and got himself a top 10. And this gives a ton of hope to the Stewart Haas Racing stable in general. That gives a lot of much-needed confidence to the garage. And a big reason for that is because Stewart Haas Racing could change manufacturers. There's a lot of drama between Ford and Stewart Haas right now. They're expected to end their relationship very soon, as soon as this year. So what does that mean for them? Well, there's a manufacturer that is in works with NASCAR to join NASCAR potentially in the future, and the talks are getting stronger and stronger as we go on, that's Honda. So what does that mean? Honda's in serious talks to join NASCAR, and Stuart Haas could be on the way out of Ford. Especially, and this is especially since Front Row Motorsports got a promotion and got the Tier 1 partnership with Ford. There's not a whole lot of spots for guys to have Tier 1 partnerships. So that to me spells out that Stuart Haas Racing could be on the way out or could be getting, you know, bumped down to a Tier 2 sponsorship with Ford or a partnership with Ford. And it's extremely hard to win races when you get knocked down to that kind of level. I mean, Front Row Motorsports in and of itself, it took them winning two races in 2 years for Ford to kind of look and go, okay, get you a partnership with RFK and then go to Penske, and then we'll give you a Tier 1 partnership. So Stuart Haas could be on the way out, and Honda would be my first look. You could be their first team. You'll have the Tier 1 partnership with them. This could happen as early as 2026. I don't think it's really in the realm of possibility for this year. They would have had to send a lot of proposals. They would have had to send their body proposal and their manufacturer proposal months ago. I believe we would have heard about it. If not, they're doing a really good job of keeping it under wraps. They're doing an extremely good job of keeping it quiet if anything has progressed more than what we've heard. So I think it's going to be 2026 at least. Maybe Ford and Stuart Haas can come to a one-year extension. Yeah, maybe it involves them getting bumped down to a Tier 2 partnership. But I would love to see them experiment with Honda. And if not, I think Chevy's probably the way to go. But this Ford and Stuart Haas split, a lot of the belief comes from when Stuart Haas lost out on the Kyle Larson sweepstakes back when Kyle Larson was a free agent. There was even a post on Twitter where somebody had said, you know, quit playing around. Let's put Kyle Larson in the 14. And Tony Stewart came out and said, I tried. Ford said no. So he's even taken to Twitter or X to be very public about it. And I think that's what started the rift. If these rumors are true and Ford and Stuart Haas are really getting ready to split, I would draw it back specifically to that. And Tony Stewart is still fuming over the fact that Kyle Larson ended up in the Chevy stable. He ended up with Hendrick Motorsports. And he ended up with his first year back in the sport after taking a year off, winning 10 races and a championship. So I think that's really what causes the split there. I think that's what causes the consideration to even leave Ford, or Ford's consideration to move on from Stuart Haas Racing. And I think Honda's going to be the one to kind of creep up and go, hey, Stuart Haas, why don't you come and be our flagship team? So if Honda really does join the sport in 2026 and Stuart Haas sticks with Ford for another year, maybe two, look for them to be the first Honda team. So now it's time for our two-minute drill where we listen to you. These comments are taken from our comment section from last week's episode on the Podbean app or our Facebook and Instagram DMs on our pages. Today's comment comes from our Podbean app. It's from none other than Robbie at P. Super consistent. Love getting these questions from him. He asked, was it a mistake for Denny Hamlin to re-sign in the 11 and not start pushing his own team forward? Well, Robbie, you know I love hearing from you. Your 2 minutes starts right now. Let's get going. So Denny Hamlin, obviously I've spoken about this before. Denny Hamlin is getting older. Thoughts of retirement are kind of creeping into the back of his head. He's kind of knowing that he's about to start going into the moonlight of his career. He created 2311 Racing with Michael Jordan in 2020, and it's been fairly successful. It started out as a one-car team with Bubba Wallace, and then they opened it up, signed Kurt Busch in the 45. Sadly, it resulted in Kurt Busch retiring after an accident in the next-gen car. And then they went out and grabbed Tyler Reddick. The team's been on the up-and-up, and Tyler Reddick and Bubba Wallace are their two full-time drivers. They even have a third part-time car, and that's the 67 car. We've seen a couple of guys drive that 67 car. Here's the thing with this. Denny Hamlin still believes he can win a championship with Joe Gibbs Racing. Joe Gibbs Racing has that top-tier equipment. They've got a Tier 1 partnership with Toyota. I know we talk about these partnerships being Tier 1, Tier 2, Tier 3, but that's super important when it comes to this sport. So with that Tier 1 partnership, that's his best chance at winning a championship still. 2311's good. They're not Joe Gibbs Racing good. Joe Gibbs is the best place for Denny Hamlin to be if he still believes that he can win a championship, and he does, and it shows. The other thing with this is there isn't a charter to spare, and they're ridiculously expensive. With his drivers consistently racing well and winning races on occasion, Tyler Reddick, one of the best road course drivers in the sport today. Bubba Wallace, always super consistent and has won races before. For 2311, with those guys performing the way that they do year in, year out, there's no reason to think right now about moving over to 2311 unless they decide to secure a full-time charter for Denny Hamlin in that 67 car. Or they might try to shuffle some things around. But for right now, if Joe Gibbs is still behind you and still willing to have you, you've still got the sponsorship money coming in. They've still got the top-tier equipment. You still believe that you can win a championship. I would stay there. While retirement's in the back of his head, and that might include a switch to 2311 eventually, he's still in what is the best place for him. He's still in the team that's going to win him a championship if it happens. And even then, he's still a Hall of Fame driver with or without it. Yeah, so this might happen, and two, maybe 3 years, I think we're approaching the time where Denny Hamlin is going to make a decision on whether he's going to move to his own team or go back into a part-time capacity with his own team with that third car. I don't have a problem with him sticking with Joe Gibbs Racing. He's going to learn a lot from Joe Gibbs himself and from the engineers and everything, and he's still learning a ton about how a team is run. I've got no problem with him sticking there, and I think that's the best thing for him. So that there concludes our two-minute drill. Again, thank you, Robbie, for the comment. Everyone, remember, if you want to be featured on our two-minute drill segment, leave a comment under this week's episode, and you're in the running. Keep those comments flowing. If you aren't picked one week, don't worry. We do a two-minute drill every single week, and occasionally I'll find a comment that is just so good that I've got to throw it into the show outside of the two-minute drill, and I want to talk about it a little bit more. So just reach out to us on the Podbean app or our Facebook and Instagram DMs, and you're in the running. A couple weeks ago, about 2 weeks ago, and this was a big deal, Duke's basketball team went to Wake Forest to play them. Duke lost that game by 4 points. Wake Forest storms the court. What happens in that moment? Kyle Filipowski, Duke's premier guy, the face of their team, a guy that's slated to potentially be a top five pick in the draft heading into his NBA career, he gets hurt. Now everybody is crying out for the NCAA to do something about rushing the court. Here's the thing. You can kind of feel when the court's about to get rushed. It's Duke versus Wake Forest. Even so, it's Duke versus North Carolina. It's Virginia Tech and Virginia. You can feel when the court is going to get stormed. Duke's one of, they're now ranked top 10. They're now ranked number 9. Wake Forest isn't ranked. So not only are they beating one of their top rivals, they're beating a nationally ranked team. They're going to storm the court. There's nothing we can do to stop it. So here's a couple of things that might need to be done to kind of help control all of this. Number one, if we can get a little bit of security, maybe some private security for the players, they can go, okay, we're in a big stage right here. It's Duke and Wake Forest. We're in Wake Forest. We might need a little bit more security. So at the end of the game, we get our guys out of there quick. The other thing, too, was their coach, John Shire. He kept them in with 1.4 seconds to go, and they're down by four. If I'm Coach Shire, I'm going, okay, it's 1.4 seconds. We're down by four. It's pretty unrealistic to rely on a four-point play off of a steal. I think I need to pull my guys back towards the locker room. We can feel the energy in this building. We can feel that the court's about to get rushed. I don't want my guys getting hurt. We need to pull them back, which is something he did acknowledge. Maybe he shouldn't have done that. But here's the other thing, too. Kyle Filipowski stuck his leg out like he was trying to trip one of the Wake Forest fans, which, you know, is pretty classless on his part. Not to say, well, really is to say, kind of a sore loser type thing, right? You lose a big game. You're still nationally ranked. It's not quite the end of the world, but don't throw your leg out because he was trying to trip somebody else, which could have resulted in an injury to somebody else. Play stupid games, win stupid prizes, Kyle. You stuck your leg out and you had to deal with the consequences of getting hurt. I don't think it's more so, you know, we saw it a while ago with Caitlin Clark. She also got knocked over when somebody had stormed the court at Iowa. So is there something, do we need to do a little bit of something to kind of help control that situation? Yeah, there's ways to do it, though. There was ways to do it, but we don't have to eliminate storming the court in any sort of capacity. It's always been a thing in NCAA sports, and I think it will be a thing for years and years to come. I don't think we need to eliminate it, but there are some things we can do to control it. And I think security is one of the biggest ones, or maybe some stadiums can, or some teams can maybe set up a timer or something that will count down before they storm the court, which will give the opposing team opportunity to get off the floor. Maybe even the home team, if we're really worried about people getting injured that often. It doesn't happen often, but when it does, somehow it is the best players on the teams that always get hurt. So it does need to be controlled a little bit, but to go out and say that we need to eliminate storming the court or storming the field at all, I think is a little bit too extreme. It's a little bit too extreme. And the fact that, let's be honest, Kyle Filipowski is responsible for his own injury by sticking his leg out. You can see it from the aerial camera that they have up a little bit farther in the rafters. Because if you look at it from the view that they did have, it does look like Kyle Filipowski got hurt by result of that fan. But then they go up from above and they show the camera cut from above, and Kyle Filipowski sticks his leg out. So it's his own fault that he got hurt. He should have just walked off the court. Or he could have just stayed still and waited for things to calm down a little bit, but he would have never got out of there at that point. But let's just look at the facts there and kind of look and understand that we can control things a little bit more, but we don't need to eliminate it. I want to thank everyone for joining us today. I know it was a little bit of a shorter episode for this week. I do want to announce I will be out of town next week. I will be in Ohio and then on the road towards Richmond over the weekend. Starting on Thursday, we'll be leaving at like 5 in the morning. So we won't have a show next Thursday. But we'll be back the Thursday after that with plenty to talk about. So we're going to miss you. Hopefully you miss us, but not too much. And we'll see you guys in 2 weeks. Want to give a special shout out to Brittany Stalker for our logo design. You can check her out on Instagram at ashadowsart. That's at ashadowsart on Instagram. You can check out her past, present, and future projects. To get in contact with us, you can check us out on the Podbean app at The Hive with Devin Beasley. You can find us on Facebook with the same handle, The Hive with Devin Beasley, or you can reach out to us on Instagram at The Hive DB. That's at THEHIVEDB. And again, thank you to all of our listeners, wherever you are, however you are. Thank you for joining us today, taking time out of your day to listen to us. And we'll see you guys next week.